Our next guest is the all-time top goal scorer, male or female, for Wales, with over 100 international caps, Helen Ward, now Watford Women FC general manager. In a tale of true full circle moment, Ward made her senior debut in football in 2001 as a striker at Watford before being announced as the general manager of Watford in August 2023. Ward has enjoyed a long football career playing for Chelsea, Arsenal and Reading. I'm your host, Lorraine Moir-Lucy. Join me as I get to know Helen and discuss her experiences in football on both sides of the white line. Helen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Before we begin, we like to start off our sessions with an icebreaker. Are you ready for that?
I think so, yes.
Yes. What's your favourite quote, expression or motto, and why is it your favourite?
There's probably quite a few that I could think of, but one of them, I don't know if it's a quote or an expression, but it's something that I truly believe in, and that's, if you want to do something or achieve something, you'll find time, not excuses. And I think it kind of resonates with me, because a lot of times people will try things that they're not really enjoying, and then they'll find reasons not to do it and excuses not to do it. Whereas if you truly believe in something, people often ask me, oh, how did you manage playing football, having kids, doing a broadcasting degree and this, that and the other? And I say, it's because I enjoyed all those things. So I made sure I found the time, rather than finding an excuse not to do it. So that one kind of sticks with me quite a lot.
I also like it quite a lot from another perspective of, like, maybe if you find yourself in a position where you're making up a lot of excuses, it might be a good indicator that maybe you don't like something as much as you thought, yeah, or that maybe something is not quite what it should be.
Exactly that. And I think it's okay to quit things at times if they're not right for you. It's having that strong mentality that it's okay to quit and start again and do something different.
I love that. And you said thank you for the incredible introduction, but honestly, it's like, wow, what a career you've had. When I said the introduction, and whenever people sort of repeat back to you what you have done, what feelings or thoughts come up for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of pride attached to it. I think when you're in the middle of your career and you're going through it day by day, you probably don't appreciate what you're doing or what you've done until you retire or you come on to podcasts like this. And people, as you said, you know, introduce you in such a kind way, and you kind of think, actually, I've done okay. I'm not doing too badly. It gives me a big sense of pride. And it's nice to know that people are aware of, you know, my achievements and my career. And yeah, it's good to reflect at times. And, you know, as humans, we're often, our natural instinct is to criticize and think out what the negatives might be, pull out the bits that you're not so happy with. But I think it's really important to appreciate what you've done and be positive about your contribution to a particular industry or area or anything it might be that you feel is positive. And yeah, having someone else say it to you is sort of reinforcement of, yeah, it was worth it, and it was I've had a good time and a good career.
How good were you at sort of reinforcing the good work that you're doing while you were sort of doing it, before, like, you were looking back and going, wow, that was amazing? How good were you at sort of giving yourself that encouragement and saying well done in the moment?
I probably wasn't very good at it, to be honest. I think if I look back now, the times where I might have done it more were probably when I had the kids and I was away from the game for a period. And that sort of desire to get back. And that was when I kind of thought, well, look at what you've done so far. Like, you can get back to that level again. And maybe in times when you're a bit low on confidence and you're drawing out everything that's wrong with your game or how you're playing, you kind of have to have those times where you think, no, you need to appreciate what you are good at and go back to the basics and concentrate on your strengths. And it's not easy to do, and I probably didn't do it enough, but I think all the top players and elite athletes, or, you know, top performers in any industry, will always know what they're good at, and they revert to that when things get tough, and then they bounce back stronger. So yeah, you're probably better listening to my advice than following what I did as a player, because I probably wasn't the best at that sort of self-belief and self-confidence for, you know, a fair bit of my career.
And was this kind of career something that you always dreamt of, or did it like sort of one thing lead to another and then you look back down and you see the full picture? Was this your dream from childhood, or did it just kind of all unfold?
Yeah, it all unfolded really. You know, players of my generation, it wasn't really an option when I was a kid. There was no way in a million years, if someone said, "Oh, you'll be a footballer when you're older," I'd have said, "Not a chance. I'm a girl. It's not going to happen." But I was really fortunate that as I grew up, the game was growing all the time. But yeah, when I was a youngster, I wouldn't have been able to name one female footballer, you know, any internationals, anything like that, because you just didn't see them, you didn't hear of them. I just played with my mates because I enjoyed it. And then as I got older, it was like, right, I'll go up to the next age group. And then you get to senior level, and it's still very much playing with your friends. Then you get into, you know, at Watford, we got promoted a couple of times, and you end up playing against the likes of the Arsenals and, you know, the big teams. And that's when it started to be a bit more serious. Then obviously when I moved to Arsenal and I made my international debut for Wales, then it was like, okay, this is a little bit more than just a hobby now. And going back to what I said about you'll find time, not excuses, I found myself making room for football in my life rather than taking football out for other things. And when I started prioritizing football over social events and all that kind of stuff, I kind of knew that it was more than just a bit of fun. But I quite enjoyed that it wasn't a dream. It was almost like I was living in the dream rather than having it beforehand and then aspiring to do it. But I love now that there are young girls and boys who can have that dream and really feel like it's a realistic career path and have high ambitions of being right up the top at, you know, in what is a ever growing sport now in women's football and women's sport in general now.
And there's often this pressure for women players specifically to sort of juggle the career on the pitch with, okay, how do I survive? How do I make a living? And I'd imagine that when you first started out, it was, because now, like with up-and-coming players, the game is more professionalized, there are more initiatives being put in place to relieve that pressure of having to work a job or study or while also playing football full-time. What was that journey like for you? Was it, I'm quite interested to see how that was back then versus how it is now for the younger generation coming up.
Yeah, so again, it was a case of finding something that fitted around my football and making sure that, rightly or wrongly, work was second best, and I got jobs that didn't involve work at the weekend. So I worked in schools. I was made sure that I was free evenings and weekends to train and play. And the work sort of subsidized my football rather than the football subsidizing my work. So you could argue that I put sort of any other sort of career on hold to pursue my football career. And that was the same for a lot of players. A lot of players, you'd have quite a few teachers or people that worked in schools again to make sure that they didn't have to work at weekends or getting sort of part-time jobs in shops. There are quite a few players still, particularly there's definitely a few at Watford, and there's, you know, other players in the National League who have got really good careers away from the game, but they still have that desire and mentality to turn up and train 2-3-4 times a week and play at the weekends, and it's a really hard balance. But what's great now, like you said, is the younger players now can focus fully on football, and although that is brilliant, I think there is still a little bit concern in the back of my mind that it's not paying money like the men's game, and it's not like you can have 2 or 3 years at the top level and then retire and not have to work again. So I do think there is a balance to be had, that education is still really important for our young players. And I say that about boys as well, because you never know that anything can happen. Mm. One injury and your career is taken away from you. So I think it's important that we we maintain that sort of desire to allow our players to be educated and have other options away from the game while still being able to fully concentrate and be professional and, you know, train day in, day out, look after their bodies properly. So it's not easy. And I say, in obviously women's football, it's probably that little bit tougher. But I also think there's that ingrained knowledge that you have to do that as a female player, that you have to have that little bit of something extra going on in the background, whether it's, as I said, studying or almost like a side hustle, if you like, learning all the time, so that when you do finish, you've got something that you can go into, and you're not worried about finances and how you're gonna live beyond your playing days.
And it's so incredible that you also mention boys or men needing to have a plan B or some kind of something to fall back on, because in the news, like lately, loads of stories have been coming out about former players that maybe played for a season or played for like a couple of seasons, and then now they find themselves in very muddy waters in terms of with the law, because they had to resort to other things. Because when it comes to the men's game, you don't really get that preparation for, okay, if things don't work out, what are you going to do? So I think that's a very timely statement to make, and a very topical thing right now.
Yeah, and I think also with boys and men's football, it's so competitive to get those contracts, and you can have some top players that miss out. You might just be in the wrong club at the wrong time, or you don't get the right person watching you when you have your best game, and you know there's somebody else ready to take your place. And that's the harsh reality of it. But at the same time, because it's so competitive, young boys probably think, well, I haven't got time to focus on my school or, you know, another opportunity, because I've got to put everything into football. And it's so hard, and it's hard for parents as well, because they want their kids to do well. But at the same time, in the back of their mind, they're thinking, but I have to make sure that they're doing the right things away from the game as well. And it's tough, because a boy will go all the way through the academy, they think that they're gonna make it, and then get to 18 and they don't get that pro contract, and what do they do now? And I think is it Trent Alexander-Arnold is putting things together with the PFA of for players that don't quite make it and they drop out, and an opportunity to learn and careers beyond playing that is really helpful. And I think there needs to be more of that, more support for players exiting the game at an early age that haven't got that financial stability that you would have if you do make it in the program for a good number of years.
And I think the US actually has a good structure when it comes to like collegiate sports, in the sense that players have to stay in college and learn something while keeping up their good grades, but also having the financial support to see through that entire degree or whatever it is they're getting. That's a very good structure to have in place.
Most definitely.
Now, you are no longer playing on the pitch, but you are still an active player in a different capacity as general manager for Watford FC, the women's team. What has that transition been like for you?
It's been a learning curve. It's been a steep learning curve. Wasn't in my plans necessarily. I retired last summer, and it wasn't an easy decision. It wasn't a quick decision. It's something that I thought about long and hard. And I think probably at the start of last season, I knew that it was going to be my last. I didn't make any rash decisions. I didn't sort of announce it to anyone, or I had conversations obviously with close family and friends, but I wanted to make sure it was right before I fully committed. And then with Wales, we missed out on qualifying for the World Cup in a playoff game. And at that point I thought, you know what, I'm done now. I'm not going to make another tournament. And if, like for me, Wales was the pinnacle, and as much as I love playing for Watford and the other clubs I was lucky enough to play for, Wales was always everything to me. And once I knew that was sort of done, I knew that come the end of the season, I'd want to step back altogether. So I had it. I knew that it was coming. Made the announcement about a year ago now. So just in the towards the last few weeks of the season. So I had a few conversations at the club. I wanted to stay involved in the game if I could, and the club were quite keen to keep me on, but we couldn't sort of figure out in what capacity that would be. Then the season sort of came to an end. People had a little break. And then when I came back in to have some conversations with people, the idea of being the general manager came up. Laura Dyer, who stepped in as interim last year, did a fantastic job, but she wanted to focus on her coaching and wasn't able to. She didn't feel she was able to do both roles simultaneously. So they said, what do you think? And my initial reaction was, I'm not sure that's for me. I'm not sure I've got that in me. But the more we discussed it, the more we talked about it. And I'm really lucky at Watford that they support me. And the fact that I've got a young family, and I explained that part of the reason I was retiring was because I wanted sort of family time back at evenings, weekends. And they kind of said, look, it's, you can work it how you need to, as long as you're getting the work done. In terms of working from home, all that kind of stuff, you can make it work for yourself and your family. And that was a big factor for me. So I thought, why not? It's a good opportunity to learn. It's been interesting. I've seen a very different side to the game. It's not like a player when you can just turn up, put your boots on, get on with it, and then go home at the end of the day. There's lots to it. That lots of admin, lots of conversations, things like this as well, trying to get the word out there about not only women's football, but Watford as a club as well. And I've met some really cool people and had some cool opportunities. So there are bits of it, don't get me wrong, that don't float my boat, you know, the operational side of things and making sure that everybody's in the right place at the right time. But I have to do it, and, you know, I get it done as best I can. But there's the commercial bits and the strategy and that kind of stuff that I'm really interested in. And that's been really enjoyable for me.
And what's your vision for the club, and how do you see yourself and the team getting there?
Yeah, so obviously we're in a position at the moment. Our league position is tough. It's been a tough season. Lots of things that we could have done better. Lots of things that have sort of been out of our control as well. And also the fact that we're very much a part-time team compared to the majority of the league who are fully professional. And that's always a barrier, but we try to use it to our advantage. We try to say to the girls, look, think of how much you want to be here. You wouldn't be here until 10, 11 o'clock at night if you didn't care. Use that drive. Know that when you're going out onto the pitch, what you put yourself through, you know, through the week to get out there. And, you know, we've been able to attract a couple of players who have those dual careers and weren't ready to or able to give those up, but still wanted to play at a good level. So we've attracted some good players who may not have been able to play at this level at another club because of the commitments it required. But in saying that, we're not going to settle for it. You know, a big part of my job is trying to grow the program at Watford, try and push it towards that professional model. Obviously, we rely heavily on finances and sponsorships, commercial stuff. So just trying to garner that extra revenue from different places that might help us take that next step. Obviously, our focus right now is staying in the league. It is a tough division. It's the most competitive it's been, both at the top and the bottom, in a long time, which is great. But if we do that, we'll really look to push on and try and establish ourselves in the Championship. And yeah, for me, over the next couple of years, that's my aim and my ambition for the club and the team to really make a mark at that level of the game.
And we mentioned this a little bit, like we touched on a few points regarding like the difference between when you were up and coming as a player to how it is today for those who are up and coming as players. But when you look at the state of sports just in general, what advancements and developments have made you the happiest? Like, what have you seen that is really like headed in the right direction?
I think in recent times, it's the determination of the broadcasters and media to put women's sport out there and, you know, make it the forefront despite some negativity around it from certain places. And it's sort of almost like a sticking two fingers up and saying, we're not going anywhere. And that determination and that knowledge that what you're putting out there is good and people are interested. I think you look at a club like Arsenal where they're breaking records every time they step on the pitch at the moment in terms of attendances. And I think the general public now really getting behind it, I think, is fantastic. And then the next generation, the kids, you know, kids of my kids' age, they're growing up and it's normal. And that's the biggest thing, is it's being normalized. It's not such a big thing like, oh my goodness, you're a woman and you play football, like that's so unusual. It's normal now. And the longer that that is the case, obviously the better it's going to be. I think now the next step is for more and more organizations to realize the potential of women's sport and the, how marketable it is. A lot of female athletes have really great stories to tell that perhaps are a bit different to their male counterparts just because of the trials and tribulations we've been through. And I think it's important that businesses and corporations understand that, and they want to project that and put it out there. And that can only help grow the game. So there's been some really good developments, but I still think there's a lot more we can do as well.
And specifically with broadcasting, like with the WSL and NWSL in the US, like they've been, they've renegotiated deals that are like the highest they've ever been. So there's so much that that is going on, and tying it back to what you said about where you at Watford need to go is like getting all that commercial bits in place so that you can support the development of the sport. So it is fantastic to see that there's so many developments. But on the flip side, what challenges do you believe that sports organizations need to address with immediacy, or even just the general sort of like sporting ecosystem? Like what needs to be really tackled head on so that we can see even more development within women's sports?
I think it's that risk and reward. I think quite often we're obsessed with, well, we can't possibly put that much money in because it's not bringing any, we're not getting any back yet. But I see from a male sport perspective, companies are a lot more willing to gamble, if you like, and put that faith that they will get the money back, even if they're not to begin with. And it's kind of like you've got to invest to get back. And that's what I'd like, is a few more risks taken, because I do believe it will grow. At the moment, ticket prices don't match the men's game, and I don't think that's a terrible thing. But at some point, it will grow, and that's what sponsors and partners need to remember, is, okay, right now, I'm not going to get any return on my investment, but let's look 5-10 years down the line. I could be bringing it in, and if people get on board with it, and if we all join in together, it could be, as Karen Carney said, a billion-pound industry. And, you know, the figures coming out of the World Cup in the summer from Australia and New Zealand, the money that it made for that tournament, you know, both for the country and, you know, the tournament itself, it is starting to bring in serious money now, and it has to be taken seriously. And not just in football, women's sport in general, the Olympics this summer, for the first time, 50% of the athletes will be female. And I think that's unreal. So half of what we see is going to be females competing. And as I said, we're here to stay. So let's get on board and let's enjoy it. We don't have to keep comparing ourselves to male sports. We can enjoy them side by side. And I think the sooner people realise that, the better. And as I said, the younger generations now are starting to see that. And then as they become adults and they start getting into business and all that side of things, and hopefully that shift will really start to happen.
You mentioned the pricing of tickets. And like, it has always been a big question mark I've had in terms of like, yeah, the pricing of tickets for women's sports, for women's football in the UK is quite low. And when I compare it to the US, for example, they're a bit more, slightly more aggressive with it. Like, what do you, yeah, so like, do you have any thoughts around that? Because I feel like however way I ask you might be a leading question, just because for me, I have such a massive issue with that, especially because we're seeing how much Arsenal is like breaking record on record. And then we're seeing how much broadcast is being like the revenue from like media, right? The rights, like it's growing exponentially. However, when you look at ticket prices, they're not growing in the same rate. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, and I think it's a really delicate balance, because you want to get people through the doors to realise what they've been missing. But then if they get used to having it for cheap or for free, at what point do they say, actually, that's something I want to pay for? And I think women's football fans have been quite spoilt in how accessible and how cheap games can be. But you also don't want to lose that connection that teams and players have with their supporters. I don't know the answer, if I'm honest, and if I did, I'd probably be in a lot higher up position than I am. It's almost like a trial and error, I think, for clubs. As games like the ones at Arsenal, like the Lionesses in their international games, if you start selling out tickets, then you can probably start to up the prices because the demand is there. And if you miss out on a ticket, you think, well, next time I'm going to get in there early, and you'll be willing to pay that little bit more. And I think it just has to be a gradual increase. You can't suddenly say, right, last season you came in for £1, but this season we're going to charge you 15. It has to be a gradual increase. But as you say, it has to match those broadcasting and, you know, sort of commercial numbers that we're starting to see on the rise as well. So it's a really fine balance, and as I said, it's probably not my forte, but it's something that needs to be addressed, because you can't undervalue the sport. You know, you can't, by giving away tickets for free, yes, you're getting people in there, but you're also devaluing it, and you're saying, look, I'm going to give you this ticket, but if you turn up, you turn up, if you don't, you don't, you haven't paid, so it doesn't cost you anything. So that you do have to make sure that you're not doing that too often.
100%, and I completely agree with you. There are many perspectives to try to balance, because you don't want to do one thing in favor of the clubs and their commercial success only to find that you've sort of like disillusioned the fans or lost them along the way, you know. And one word I would use to describe your career is longevity. And for anyone out there who wants to build a career in the sports industry with as much longevity as you've had, what advice would you give that person?
I often say to people, you have to be enjoying what you're doing and have a smile on your face. You won't last if you don't. So if you find yourself in an environment, whether that be a particular club, or a work environment, or whatever it is you're doing, and you're not happy, again, don't be afraid to quit and start again and go somewhere that you do feel happy. The happier you are, the better you're going to perform, and the longer you're likely to keep going for. You will have times where you're not happy, of course. I'm not saying that I've smiled the whole way through my career, not at all. But it's having that resilience and that determination of working out, is this what I want to do? If the answer is still yes, then work out how to make it happen, where you need to be, how to get the best out of yourself. And just keep challenging yourself, keep testing yourself, to keep asking yourself questions of, right, what do I need to do next? How do I get better? If I'm not happy, where can I go where I will be happy? And try and problem solve. And, you know, if you get to that point of quitting, although I say it's okay to quit, make sure that you push yourself and you test yourself before you make that decision. Then when you do that, make that decision, go in all, you know, put full throttle into it and go into your next challenge with, you know, loads of enthusiasm. And if you do that, you'll keep going.
Is there anything you're working on that you would like our listeners to check out?
I don't really have time to work on too much at the moment, to be honest. I'm just busy with obviously Watford. I've done a few bits with the Football Association of Wales as well, which is really great, getting out to meet people all the time, and yeah, looking after the two little ones at home. So it's quite full on. No exciting new projects at the moment, but if any listeners out there have got any that they think I'm, you know, might be good to get involved in, then give me a shout. But yeah, nothing on the cards at this point.
Wonderful. And if they do have projects and they want to get in contact with you, where can they find you?
So I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or X. I think they're both Helen Wardy 10. And my LinkedIn's just me, Helen Ward.
Yeah, and we'll put all the links down in the description box. But thank you, Helen, for coming onto the podcast and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been my pleasure.